Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're in our third hour. If you'd like to participate in this discussion of the covenant as it's presented in Yahweh's Torah, our number is 877-300-7645. Yesterday at the end of this program, we did have a call from Cherie, and I think Cherie's calling in from Texas. She later did text me, or not text me, but emailed me her question. It happened to be on circumcision. It was sort of an interesting question. I thought I would deal with it because our next statement is on circumcision. And she said, you know, when she was a parent, she had, I believe, two sons, and she circumcised her sons, just like my wife and I just circumcised our sons when they were born. We didn't know why. We didn't, just Sherry's saying the same thing. She was not a participant in the covenant, did not know Yahweh, just as my wife and I weren't and didn't. She says, so, you know, as a parent, does that count in terms of acceptance of the terms and conditions of the covenant? And it's really interesting as a question, because there's only one of the terms and conditions of the covenant that is physically demonstrative. The others are all attitudinal. You know, walking is physically demonstrative, and God asks us to walk away from religion and politics, from human corruption, from everything that Babylon represents. It's still attitudinal. You know, you're choosing to disassociate from those things. It's, God's not telling us, you know, I live in the United States, that I need to walk to Mexico. Or if I lived in Mexico, to walk to Costa Rica, you know, for example. So it's attitudinal, in terms of walking away from our country. And the second, which is trust and reliance upon Yahweh, that too is attitudinal. Once you come to know and understand, you can choose to trust and rely. There is no demonstrative act that signifies that. As we move down through the list, God encourages us to walk to him and become perfect. Well, here we're answering his invitations, and where there is something that we can do, for example, on Passover, we enjoy lamb and unleavened bread with bitter herbs, and we, for the next 7 days, we eat un-yeasted bread in observation of this invitation that Yahweh has encouraged us to participate in each day along the way, us observing. But we, even there, for the most part, what we do is attitudinal. It's about knowing what these days represent, embracing them, celebrating them, applying them. It's far less about doing than it is knowing, understanding, and responding, accepting their benefits. As we move to the fourth, which is to observe the covenant, while observing also is a doing kind of a thing, observing is basically closely examining, carefully considering, which would be here now the terms and conditions of the covenant as they're presented in the Torah. And while you can do that and demonstrably do that, it's there isn't a specific quantity of, oh boy, you need to read it this much, this often, and contemplate it for this amount of time. It's not a purely demonstrative thing. It's, are you willing to prioritize the Torah's presentation of the covenant so that it becomes a focus, and so that you come to the point that you enjoy benefiting from the enlightenment and the empowerment that this covenant gift provides? But then when you get to the fifth, where God asks us, and I'm going to share this with you in the next statement, where God asks us as parents to circumcise our sons. Yeah, that is a physical doing, because God makes it really clear that he wants this circumcision to be both of the spirit and of the flesh, so that there is a symbolic gesture that is being offered here, but also a physical one. So through whatever reason, Cherie and my wife and I, we honored the physical gesture regarding circumcising our sons. We just had no clue as to what the spiritual meaning was of circumcision and why it was important for them. And so my answer to Cherie, you know, because she said, you know, is that good enough? And because almost all of these statements are attitudinal, once you come to know and understand and appreciate what God is offering and expecting of us if we wish to be part of his family and what he's willing to do on behalf of his children and embrace those things, accept those things, act upon those things, then you receive the benefit. And so it isn't, in her case, she, and just like myself, I've come to recognize what these things represent. And so, from God's point of view, that is good enough. We know that because when Abraham was shown how he was going to be transformed into, to light and be a spiritual being and was shown, Yahweh's home, he immediately responded and said, I trust and rely upon you. Now that I know who you are and understand what you're offering, I've chosen to trust and rely on you. Yahweh said immediately, based upon that declaration of attitude, that, Abraham was now perfect in his eyes. So, best answer to the question is that it's the recognition of these things, coming to know them, understanding them, appreciating them, responding to them, embracing them, accepting them, if you will, that makes the difference with God. And the moment we do that, we're considered acceptable to him and are invited to be adopted into his family. Now, here's the statement on circumcision. It's actually the third in a row on circumcision. One was a simple statement where God said, "For to help you better understand who I am, what I'm offering, and our relationship together, the one and only covenant and your acceptance of it, you should circumcise your children so that you and they remember and come to memorialize, therefore sign your name, if you will, on this, your acceptance of the terms and conditions of the covenant." The next speaks of the covenant, of circumcision being the sign of the covenant. Therefore, when we embrace this sign, Yahweh immediately recognizes that we've chosen the covenant. Now, here's the third. It's an explanation of what God wants done. "And a son of 8 days you shall circumcise." This was written in the Niphil stem in this particular case and the imperfect conjugation. Now, I'm going to read through this and we'll come back to what the Niphil stem and imperfect conjugation mean when applied to mole circumcise. So a son of 8 days you shall circumcise with regard to your every male. So all male sons you should circumcise throughout your dwelling places and generations, no matter where you live or when you live, which is what that means. Those who are naturally born. You know, most people are pretty clear on the naturally born concept. You know, men and women come together, husband and wife become mother and father because of the, of a woman becomes pregnant from having, sexual relations with her husband, and, the child is born naturally. That is a naturally born, son. Now, there are two kinds of children in the covenant. Those who are naturally born and those who are adopted. If you're naturally born, then it's by way of being a direct descendant of Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, and therefore an Israelite, therefore related to Yah through the chosen people. So naturally born, that's cool. I wish I was naturally born into the covenant. I'm not. I'm Sioux Indian and Irish. But there is a second way, and that's what is said next. Those who are naturally born in the home as part of the family, and also those really wanting to be acquired and included of every son of foreign lands who relationally are not from your seed. So this speaks of adoption, and it's a uniquely form of adoption here because now rather than the parents saying, you know, the neat part of adoption is a parent can say, you know, other children who were naturally born to their mother and father, you know, they just came out as their children. They didn't have any say in it other than they, you know, they consummated the process. But, you know, adoptive parents say, but we went and chose you because, you know, we chose to bring you into our family, so you're special. Well, that's not the attitude that is being, that is our perspective that is being communicated here. It's those really wanting to be acquired and included. So here now the children are the ones that are choosing. So Goyim like myself, who were sons of foreign lands, we can be adopted into the covenant if we choose to be. And so circumcision now is for both those who are naturally born into the family of Yahweh through Yisrael, and those who want to be adopted, want to be acquired and included, who are sons of foreign lands. This is a comprehensive statement, so it's both of us. Now, let's go back to circumcise. So, a son of 8 days you shall circumcise, mul. That means that you shall cut off and separate the foreskin. Doesn't tell you how much. You know, maybe even from God's point of view, the slightest little sliver, the slightest little nick is sufficient. It's a, God is not telling us how much. Just saying that it's a physical act, that I want some separation here, because the circumcision, which is a cutting and separating of the foreskin, is the basis of covenant, in the sense that the covenant is cut. It's karat, the Hebrew word for cut. And this cutting creates a division between those who are included in God's family and those who are excluded. It's why Yoshua said, I did not come to bring peace, I came to bring division. To cut a divide. You can be on one side or the other. You can't be both. No one with a foot in both camps. So it is about separation, being separated from human institutions and being separated unto God's covenant family through his Torah. So that's the meaning of circumcision, and God did it at a place that's really very effective to get our attention. Now, he did it, he's doing it for males because what God knew is what research has subsequently demonstrated, that about 80% of children, both sons and daughters, are more inclined to parrot and to embrace their father's politics and their father's religion if the father has politics or religion, or no religion if he has no religion, than they are any other option. Of the three options, embrace the mother's choices, embrace the father's choices, or embrace neither. 80% in favor of the father. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm Yana. You can participate in this program by calling 877-300-7645. I was sent a letter earlier today, and I think it was regarding this upcoming Mancow interview for Thursday at 10:30 Eastern time, a.m. Eastern time. And the question was, Mancow wanted to debate a literalist in terms of the interpretation of what he would view as the Bible, because of the debates that Ken Nye has recently done, the science guy. And so they, you know, the person that was having the conversation with him, you know, I wanted to address the issue of do you interpret things literally or figuratively? And my response happened to be that Yahweh tells us when to a figurative or spiritual understanding is appropriate, and when a literal, actual interpretation of what he has said is appropriate. So God has actually given us that insight. But to know those insights, you have to look at the text in Hebrew. And it's the stems that tell us this. The stem here happens to be the Niphil. The Niphil stem is the passive version of the call stem, with one exception. And the call stem tells us, interpret this literally. This is genuine. This is actual. Don't take a symbolic view, or, you know, I shouldn't say don't take a symbolic view. That's not really fair. it means to interpret this literally. This is actually occurring. I want this to actually occur. What I'm telling you here is genuine. It's real. That doesn't mean that something that is real can't also have symbolic implications. In fact, most of what God says that's real does. But it means that it, at least as it relates to this statement, interpret it literally. Well, the Niffle carries that same aspect of the call. It means literally, I want you, a son of 8 days, you shall actually, literally circumcise. Okay? This is not a symbolic circumcision when the call or the Niffle stem is used. All right? So now you have an explanation. You know, somebody says, do I interpret what he says literally or symbolically? You got an example. If it's written in the call or the Niffle stem, literally is the answer, okay, according to God. And I guess his opinion ought to matter. It is his testimony, after all. Now, the Niffle stem differs from the call stem in two ways. One is the call stem simply presents an action as literal as real, and it denotes a relationship between the subject and the object of the sentence, full stop. The Niffle stem is passive. So unlike the call, which is active, you actively do something on a passive basis, it means that something is happening to you. And it's happening to you in a passive way. Now in the Niffle, the subject receives the passive portion or aspect of the verb. Also, boy, I mean, this might sound just like way too much grammar, particularly for a radio program. But what it means in this particular case is that when we as parents follow Yahweh's instructions and circumcise our sons, literally circumcise our sons on the eighth day, that we receive the benefit of circumcision. And we receive it passively. They receive it actively because this is a literal act. And we receive the benefit passively because of the Niffle stem. The subject, which is us, are affected passively by the verb's action. Now, this really explains the nature of circumcision, because the child that we're circumcising on the eighth day has not made a choice. They don't know Yahweh from daddy, right? In fact, later, hopefully, they'll not be able to distinguish Yahweh from daddy anyway, because Yahweh wants to be our father. But this is something we are doing on their behalf that benefits us, according to Yahweh. And what it is saying here is that as parents, when we choose to do this on behalf of our sons on the eighth day, it's that we are set apart. That it's this recognition that we are set apart unto the covenant, which is the passive benefit to us while we actively benefit them. Now, when we return to Shattering Mist, I'm going to share what happens to that child as a result of having their parents choose to commit them to the covenant in this way. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. We were considering why a circumcision mule was written in the Niffle stem, where the son of 8 days old receives the action of the verb, but passively we as parents, when we circumcise our sons, receive the benefit of being circumcised, which means separated unto Yahweh. Now, the reason that the child benefits, even though they have not made a decision to accept or reject the covenant, is twofold. One is that they are now prepared to participate in Passover. If you're not circumcised, you are not prepared. You should not participate in Passover if you're not circumcised, because it's the worst of all circumstances. It means you would become immortal but eternally separated from God because you don't have the sign of the covenant. That's the worst of all eventualities. That's the problem with Christianity, where they overemphasize, they don't understand it, but they overemphasize what happened on Passover with the crucifixion, but have no concept of Passover's relationship to matzah, to perfecting us, because a immortal soul that benefits from Passover that does not observe matzah is going to spend eternity separated from God in Sheol. You don't want that to happen. So it prepares the child, the son, to be able to celebrate Passover. It no longer provides a limitation on the son in terms of participating in the covenant or entering God's home, which would be there otherwise should they not be circumcised. But before they're able, responsible for their own decisions, a child who is parents who are committed to Yahweh's covenant get the benefits of the covenant. God assumes that the family is a part of his covenant. So we can, while our children are young, actually accept Yah's covenant provisions on their behalf. And it's only when they grow older and have the ability to make a decision to reject that that they can. So as we move towards the tribulation and Yahweh's return, this should be particularly gratifying and reassuring to parents who have chosen to participate in the covenant. Because what it means is that while we're expecting us to be gleaned or harvested in the secondary harvest by Yahweh sometime within the next 10 to 15 years, and actually 10 to 13 years the way we sit today in 2014, because I believe this will happen before the fall of or during the fall of 2026 or before, based upon Yahweh's timeline. If we were to have young children now, and by the time that we're going to be gone, they will not have reached a time where they're going to be able, of their own accord, expressing understanding and knowledge to say, I want to participate in the covenant, but we're not going to leave them behind. That means that they are going to be accepted by Yahweh because we have cut them into the covenant by ourselves as parents being part of the covenant. So it's very reassuring to those who are participating in the covenant, who are young and are just beginning their families. Their families will have this wonderful and merciful benefit. Now, it's also true that the rule, you shall circumcise, was written in the imperfect conjugation. Now, there's this, I'm sure some would say, well, perfect sounds so much better than imperfect. Well, it really has nothing to do with perfect in that sense. It's that the perfect denotes a completed action. And it could be a completed action in the past, a completed action at present, a completed action in the future. It's the totality of that action. Where the imperfect means that the action has no specific beginning and no specific ending. It's ongoing. It's enduring. It's continual. It's consistent. It's habitual. And so the imperfect speaks of an ongoing benefit, in this case, of circumcision, both passively on the parents and actually on the child. So it is a wonderful way to scribe this verb, all of which are lost, of course, if you just get an English translation that doesn't convey the ongoing benefits of the imperfect conjugation or of the relational aspects, both literal for the child and passive benefit for the parent of circumcision, mule. That's why when God says, I want you to, I'm encouraging you to observe my covenant and its Torah, which provides it. This is the very kind of stuff that he's talking about. How much more you can gain by this very close examination and careful consideration. It, profound differences in simply doing an act and understanding the benefit of the act. Know how it's literal in the with our sons, and symbolic relative to us as parents. There's also interesting to about something interesting about eight. Eight is used symbolically by Yahweh in the celebration of Sukkah. You say Sukkah is the ultimate destination. We walk six steps to God. The seventh is the destination, which is living with God. Sukkah is a shelter. It's a home. It's a time where we are together as family, sharing the same home, in this case, heaven. Sukkah, though, means to camp out, which means that God's view of the ultimate destination, when we walk through the door of Passover and across the threshold of matzah and become Bukkudim, firstborn children, adopted into his family, Shabuah, then seven sevens later, and receiving the promise of the seven or of Shabbat, and are enriched and empowered by him, we ultimately end up in his home, camping out with him. His home also happens to be the universe. So this is going to be one whale of a camping trip. And in this regard, eight is symbolic as it is applied to camping out with God, with Sukkah. The eighth day of Sukkah, which is set apart and especially relevant according to Yahweh, it is symbolic of eternity. He's saying that this camping out together for his covenant children is for all time, forever. That's what eight means. Even look at the number eight, which is the numeral eight is from the eighth letter in the Hebrew alphabet. And it is actually the sign, too, for infinity. So right from the first alphabet that Yahweh conceived to the present day, we see this connection between eight and infinity. And so the eighth day is symbolic of the fact as parents, if we want to live forever, the passive benefit, and if we want our sons to live forever, active benefit, that we circumcise them on the eighth day, symbolic of the promise of eternal life in Yahweh's covenant family. So there's a lot being said here. Now, I would also tell you that there is a literal benefit here as well. Yahweh said literally on the eighth day. Now, the reason that that's important is that humans' blood's capacity to coagulate and therefore to heal a cut is greater on the eighth day after birth than at any other time in our lives. It is less so prior to the eighth day. It is less so after the eighth day. But our blood's ability to properly respond to this act and retain us in a healthy manner, that our designer, our Heavenly Father that conceived us, built this into our nature so that the eighth day was also the perfect time from a health point of view to provide circumcision. Now, God's not telling us here that we can pick and choose. He says, with regard to every male. And male here is Zakar. And so it's male is certainly conveyed by Ben, son, that says, Wa Ben, and a son, Ben, and Bena would be daughter, but Ben, being masculine, his son, he's reemphasizing male here. Female mutilation, female circumcision, which is done to most of Muslim children, particularly in the Middle East, is savage. What it does is it precludes the woman from ever enjoying sex. Female circumcision is mutilation. It's savage. It's destructive. It's hurtful. And it destroys the enjoyment of this aspect of marriage and of love. And so it is only the male that is circumcised because of this. But it's immediately visible to both husband and wife, man and woman. And this is the best way to get a man's attention because we are overly fixated on this aspect of our relationships, that we have done something special to set ourselves apart unto God and unto his covenant. But Zakar also emphasizes the masculine nature of who is to be circumcised, and Zakar is synonymous with remembering. It is also the Hebrew word to commit to memory, to remind, to remember. And so when we circumcise our sons, we bathe them, we remember. We're reminded of our obligation, obligation is probably not a really good word, but of our what should be our most important role, which is to raise our children to become Yahweh's covenant children. So we're reminded, we remember, and so do they. So it's a marvelous means to commit to memory. Then God says that this is not just an instruction for one period of time or for one place. He says that this is throughout law, door. Door means generations, and it also speaks of dwelling places. So it's no matter where you live, no matter when you live, this instruction remains valid. Now, we spent a fair amount of time on the last aspect of this, but it is extraordinarily important that we recognize that this covenant, this one and only covenant, is for those who are naturally born. The direct descendants, the seed, the Zera, of Abraham, of Yitzhak, and of Jacob, because Yahweh made that promise on their behalf. But it's also equally and no less viable, no less beneficial to all of us who have chosen to be adopted into God's family, who were born in other places by other seed. We'll return in a moment. Returning to Yahweh's statement in Bereshith in the beginning, Genesis 17:12, as he's explaining the circumcision's role in the covenant. Yahweh's presentation here is just so beautiful because it applies to all of us. Now, he's already said it's to every male, sons of 8 days old, and he has said it's for no matter where you live or when you live, by throughout your generations and dwelling places. Then he describes two groups of people. The first is those naturally born in the home. And so, you know, once you are a member of the covenant and you have children, they are naturally born in your home, and your home is Yahweh's home, because you've chosen to be part of Yahweh's home. And so he's even addressed here home, Beth. Beth is the basis of Bereth. Bereth is has a family-oriented covenant relationship, and Bereth is based on Beth, the Hebrew word for family and home. It happens to be the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet, is Beth Israel. So it is, and that's in fact, the English word alphabet is a transliteration of the first two letters, Alph, and Beth of the Hebrew alphabet. That's how we get the word, English word alphabet, from these first two letters, with Beth meaning home. So here we are with the first group being naturally born, and most of us understand what that means, in the home, is part of our family. So if you have embraced and accepted the covenant and you have children, then those are naturally born in your home, even if you are not a direct descendant of Jacob. But, of course, if you are a descendant of Jacob, this is God's instruction for those who are naturally born. And then it has a second group, those really wanting to be. It's from Kasap, those deeply desiring, strongly yearning, and passionately longing to be acquired and included. This is Mikna, purchased and obtained, of every son of foreign lands, who relationally are not of your seeds. Very descriptive. So you've got this string of words, and also wa, in addition. So it's you've got one group, and in addition, the other group. Kasap, really wanting to, longing, desiring, yearning. This is a choice that's important to us. Acquired and included. Mikna, purchased and obtained. You know, we are acquired into God's family. We are purchased. We are redeemed. Yahweh pays a ransom for us to be part of his covenant. That's what those concepts mean. But also, it's expensive to adopt a child. You know, talk to any parent that's adopted a child. It's an expensive sort of thing. And so it speaks of acquiring someone with through being willing to make the investment of every son, without exception, of foreign lands. These would be Nakar. These are places where they are not properly valued and appreciated. That's stunning, right? He didn't use the term Gentile here, which would be the normal term, but instead Nakar, because he's not just talking about foreign lands, but of places where the children are not properly valued and appreciated. Who relationally, Ashar, relationally and beneficially, are not from your seed, are not your direct descendants. And that really explains the two ways we can participate in the covenant. Now, the terms and conditions are identical. The benefits are identical. The father is identical. The covenant itself is identical. Everything is identical except the two ways that we can participate. We can participate naturally born. We can participate as being adopted. I'm adopted because I'm Sioux Indian and Irish, and my parents were not participants in the covenant, so I'm adopted. Now, would I have a slight preference of being naturally born as opposed to adopted, so that I was a Yehudim and a Yisraelite and therefore was amongst the chosen people? You betcha. But does it matter to God? Nope. Will there be any distinction after the 1,000-year celebration of Sukkah? Nope. There'll be a distinction during the celebration of Sukkah, because naturally born Yehudim who have survived the tribulation will be reestablished in their various parts of Yisrael, and will have specific roles during the 1,000-year celebration of camping out with Yahweh. But once we're part of the family, those who have chosen to be part of the family, regardless of who we are descended from, receive exactly the same benefits and get to enjoy our relationship with the exact same Father in the exact same covenant relationship. We'll continue this time tomorrow. May God bless.